Pihi om sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so last we saw is that the Pandavas had been going through the forest carried by Bhima. They were all very exhausted. They fell asleep. Bhima went to get water, but when he came back, they were all asleep. And so then he left them there. And in the meantime, then it became twilight or the night. So then the Rakshasas wake up. So Hidimba woke up his sister because he smelled humans, sent his sister to go collect dinner. But when Hidimba got there, then she found Bhima, you know, because he's so big and powerful. He's very attractive. She decided, no, she wants to marry this god. So then, waiting some time, then Hidimba, you know, is getting impatient. He's hungry. And he's wondering, why is it taking so long? Because it doesn't take so long to go collect somebody. So then he comes down. And then Hidimbi, she's very worried. So she tells Bhima, so then, you come like that. And come with me, and I'll carry you off, and we'll go somewhere else. And he says, well, I'm not leaving my mother and brothers here, so I can carry you all off. But his point is, the Kshatriyas, we don't run away from a fight, you know, not especially something that you can win. That means, according to Manu, if there's something where you're way overpowered, then you may consider, okay, an alternative solution. Retreating, taking shelter of others who are more powerful, and so many different political ways there are to increase your position. But in this case, Rakshasas and Bhima, it's like, you know, what are you talking about, you know? So Hidimba is saying, please do not argue with me, my brother is coming. Do not tarry here and become his meal. Wake up the others and allow me to rescue all of you. Bhima simply smiled. This cannibal presents no problem to me. I shall kill him here before your very eyes. Do not consider me an ordinary human being. My two arms are like the trunks of mighty elephants, and my thighs resemble iron clubs. My prowess is no less than Indra himself. I fear nothing. Which he doesn't. Hidimbi was doubtful. She had seen the Rakshasa giants prove their superiority over men on many occasions. They were more on a level with the celestials than with humans, right? Because the humans are there, and they may be powerful humans, but the Rakshasas, they're from the Antariksha, so they're more closer to the celestials than they are to the humans. They have the superpowers and all those kind of things. So she was doubtful, because she doesn't know who these are. She doesn't know the nature of the Pandavas. It was an extremely rare human who could overpower a Rakshasa, and here is one such rare human. Bhima looked over Hidimba's shoulder and saw her brother approaching. He was as dark as a rain cloud and had hideous features. His ears were shaped like arrows, and the shock of red hair on his head stood erect, right? So they just have just this big red hair. It means this, you know, like the copper-colored hair just standing up straight, right, you know? And then his ears are, you know, pointed like an arrow, so they're not just a little pointed like a, you know, like Spock or something, or an elf. They're really, really pointed. His powerful body, clad in a loincloth, was covered in wiry red hair. The Rakshasa was as tall as a tree and had broad shoulders. His arms, thick like tree trunks, reached down to his knees. His huge mouth was open, revealing rows of fearful fangs. Right? So it's not just teeth, he's got these big fangs. He opened his crimson eyes in surprise as he saw his sister standing in a human form next to Bhima. Right? Because he's coming down, he expects to be, okay, what's going on? So if she's having some problem with the human, okay, he'll take care of it. But he didn't expect to see her in the form of a human. So that means something's going on. It's not that she didn't just come down there to catch them. Seeing her so beautifully bedecked with celestial ornaments, Hidimba immediately understood that she had become lustful towards the human. He spoke angrily. "Who is so foolish as to create obstacles for me when I am hungry? Why, sister, have you become so senseless that you do not fear my anger? Fie upon you, O unchaste woman! Simply out of lust, you are ready to do me an injury and sacrifice the honor of our race. I shall kill you along with these humans." Right, so she's interested to marry these humans here. Okay, he doesn't get this meal, but it doesn't mean he's not going to get another meal. So it's just, you know, the arrangement of his sister, her marriage, her, you know, things like that. You know, he should be happy about that. It may not be what he was expecting, but he's just looking at it, his meal, and that's all. So you can see as he's not necessarily of Rakshasas, a very refined one like that. So you'll have those who are much more cultured and those who are much more uncultured. So he said he'll kill his sister along with these humans. And then, pressing his teeth together, Hidimba ran at his sister with upraised arms. Bhima stood up at once and stepped forward. His voice boomed out, "Stop! How dare you waken my peacefully sleeping brothers? Nor should you attack this innocent woman. Wicked-minded one, your sister is not in control of herself. She has been brought under Cupid's control. Therefore, she should not be punished." Right? So considering that, you should not. Bhima smiled scornfully at the cannibal. Challenging him to a fight, the prince said, "Today you shall reach the land of the dead. I shall pound your head to pieces. Your sister shall see me drag your mountain-like frame even as a lion drags an elephant." Right, so even though he's big, it doesn't mean he's not more powerful, right? Because an elephant's bigger than a lion, but the lion can drag the elephant. "Hawks, vultures, and jackals will then gleefully tear apart your corpse. Today this forest shall be rendered safe for all travelers." Because otherwise, up to now, anybody who goes through, you know, if they happen to come at the wrong time, then Hidimba eats them, so, yeah. The Rakshasa, Hidimba flared up, right? Because in the Kshatriya spirit, then they're going to, encourage the other one in the fighting mood so there's a proper fight and all that. So now Bhima said his thing. Now Hidimba will say something. Hidimba flared up. He laughed at the human's impudence. Advancing towards Bhima, the cannibal yelled, what use is this boasting? First, accomplish all this and then speak. You think yourself strong, but you shall learn the truth today. For now your brothers may sleep peacefully. First I shall kill you, the foul-mouthed one. After drinking your blood, I shall then slay the others. Right? So, okay, you want them to sleep? Let them sleep now. I'll kill you. Then after, I'll kill them. The Rakshasa rushed at Bhima with his arms outstretched. Bhima immediately seized the giant's arms and, not wanting to disturb his sleeping brothers, dragged him away a full 50 meters, even as a lion might drag a small deer. So he just grabbed him and just dragged him away to a different place. We're not fighting next to my brothers. We're fighting somewhere else. The Rakshasa, Hidimba broke free from Bhima's hold and wrapped his arms around him. He tightened his grasp and tried to crush him to death. Bhima was unharmed. Even while held in the Rakshasa's powerful grip, Bhima pulled him still further away so that his terrible cries might not disturb the others. He then burst free from Hidimba and clasped him in return. The two fighters displayed their might as they lifted and hurled each other very violently. They crashed about like two great elephants fighting for supremacy. Huge trees were smashed and splintered, right? So you have these big trees. It's not that they're just knocked over, but they're just smashed and go into pieces. You know, so much force is being exerted. The noise awoke the other princes and their mother. They sat up and looked around. They were astonished to see the extraordinarily beautiful Hidimbi. Kunti addressed her with gentle words, right? Because he's, you know, suddenly there's out in the middle of nowhere. There's this big sound. Bhima's not there. This lady is there, you know, so, okay. Oh, celestial maiden, right? Because she has all said celestial ornaments and that. So how they do things, you can tell there's a difference. Oh, celestial maiden, who are you? To whom do you belong? Why have you come to this forest? Are you the forest deity or an apsara? Please tell me everything, right? Because that was the first Bhima's first question, where are you from? Are you the forest deity here? Otherwise, out in the middle of this dark forest, why there should be such a very attractive, nicely dressed lady, right? Because, okay, so a beautiful lady goes walking through the forest or something, she's not going to look at so everything so perfect. Even if she was carried in a palanquin, you get tired, Hidimbi explained who she was and how she had come to be standing there. Pointing to the combatant, she says, "I have chosen your golden-hued and immensely powerful son as my husband. Greatly angered by this, my brother has attacked him. See how they struggle together, man and Rakshasa, filling the forest with their roars." Right, so Kunti's just asking, okay, well, who are you? Please explain. Like that, and she's just very straightforward saying, who she is and then how it all happened. So it's not all this yelling and screaming and freaking drama. They're just very straightforward, talking. Yudhishthira and the other Pandavas stood up hastily and looked across at Bhima. Right, so they weren't worried about her, right, because Bhima was at first, but then they're not. He was pounding Hidimba with his fists, making a sound like thunderclaps. Because thunder, when it makes that, you have the crackling sound, but then you have the one where it's suddenly sharp. The Rakshasa pressed forward and reached for Bhima's neck with his large hands. As they grappled, a dust cloud arose and covered them. They appeared like two cliffs enveloped in mist. Arjuna ran over and, with a smile on his lips, said to his brother, "O mighty armed one, why did you not wake me? I can see that you are growing tired fighting this terrible Rakshasa." Rest now, and I shall kill him. Nakul and Sahadev will protect our mother. Now they're fighting like this. He's coming and saying this to inspire Bhima. Right? It's okay, you look tired. I'll take care of the Rakshasa. Nakul and Sahadev will take care of the mother. You rest, so you don't have to worry. Arjuna was taunting his brother only to incite his anger, and his words had the desired effect. Bhima blazed up with fury and replied, "You need only be a spectator, dear brother. Have no fear. Now that this evil cannibal has entered my clutches, he shall not escape with his life." Arjuna urged Bhima to make haste. Twilight was approaching, and the Rakshasa's strength would be doubled. Right, so as it's going into the darkness, at night they'll have the full power, and so in the day they'll have less power. So it's just starting, So that's the time they wake up. It's just like we wake up before the sunrise, so they wake up just before the sun sets. So that's their Brahma Muhurta, you could say. So he's saying the twilight's coming; they'll get stronger. So you should kill him now. Bhima should kill him at once before he was able to use mystic powers and illusions to fight. So it appears that all comes at night, and in the day they don't necessarily have that. Bhima summoned his father Vayu's latent power. With a roar, he lifted the Rakshasa above his head. Spinning him around, Bhima said, "Wretched cannibal, you have led a life of sin. Your existence has been in vain. Therefore you deserve an unholy death. Now I shall slay you like the beast you are, thereby freeing this forest from its thorny plant." Bhima whirled the Rakshasa 100 times and dashed him to the ground. Right? 100 times, he's spinning him around. He's going to be so dizzy and all that. So then he can't function. And dashed him to the ground. Right? Dashed means you hit very, very hard. Hidimba let out a terrible roar that reverberated around the forest like a massive drum. Now Hidimba was only semi-conscious. Bhima lifted him again and, by smashing him into the trunk of a large salt tree, broke his back in two. He then stood up and smiled at his brothers, who by then had gathered around him. So he does all this, then coming back, not like the, "Oh, wow," and he comes back, "Yeah, see?" So completely different kind of mood. They embraced him and looked at the lifeless form of the giant Rakshasa, congratulating him for his incredible feat, right? Because to kill these Rakshasas, other humans can't do this, so Bhima can. So he's, wrestling and fighting, and it's fun, and he's trying to, get it. But he wasn't really so taking it so seriously. And then Arjuna inspired him, so then at that time he disoriented him, smashed him on the ground, then threw him against a tree, broke his back, and that was it. chapter 8, Ghatodgacha born and Baka slain. Right? Baka is another Rakshasa. Soon after Bhima had killed Hidimba, the sun rose and the brothers could see paths through the forest. They decided to continue south. They were bound to come to a town at some point. As they walked with Kunti between them, right? So you'll have some in the front, some in the back, and Kunti in the middle. It won't be the men are walking in the front, the ladies at the back, or just the ladies in the front. No, they'll put them in the middle. So that's the standard way that you're dealing. When you're doing something, you're taking care, then you're always going to see work this way. So if there's more men, then the women will be in the middle, the men in the front, even like on Hari Nam. Much of the time they have the men at the front, the women at the back, or that. No, you put the men there, the women in the middle, and then some men at the back also. And then, like sometimes for the show, if they're dressed up and doing all, you know, nice dancing, then you might have some ladies at the front, but there'll be guys right at the front who can take care if anybody makes trouble. As they walked with Kunti between them, Hidimba followed behind. Bhima became concerned and said, "The Rakshasas are known to avenge themselves on their enemies. They use deceptions and illusions. Therefore, O Hidimbi, you shall go the way of your brother has gone." Bhima turned menacingly towards Hidimbi. He did not fear her in the least, but wished only to scare her away before she tried any trickery. So, right, so he wasn't going to do it. He just wanted to scare her away so she'd go. And then they continue on their way. But Yudhishthir stopped his younger brother. "Bhima, you should never kill a woman, even in anger. Attaining virtue is always a higher duty than protecting one's body. Besides this, what harm can this woman do to us? You have already slain her more powerful brother," right? So she killed the more powerful brother. She's going to be less powerful. So then why would he be worried about that? You know, so it's not that she can give any trouble. Hidimbi folded her palms to Yudhishthir and thanked him. She approached Kunti and said with tears in her eyes, "Noble lady, you know well the suffering of a woman afflicted by desire. God of love has pierced me with his shafts, and I am consumed by desire for your son, Bhima. If he does not accept me as his wife, I will not be able to live. Do not doubt this." Hidimbi begged Kunti to be merciful and allow her to marry Bhima. She would carry all of them to a celestial region where they could rest for some time. There, she could sport alone with Bhima. Hidimbi promised Kunti that she would always be available to serve the Pandavas, right? Because she, you know, that would be family member. And so, you know, the Pandavas will go their way, and she as a Rakshasi will live in wherever is the circle she lives in. But any time that there would be some service in that, she'd be there. You know, just like for the Pandavas, they think of Vyasadeva, or that he'll appear. So in the same way with her. They had only to think of her, and she would appear before them at once. Kneeling before Kunti, Hidimbi said, "Please do not kill me by saying no. My request is in accord with virtue, and indeed, saving one's life by any means is always considered virtuous by the wise." Right? You know, because you're always supposed to maintain your life and, you know, do nicely like that. You do your effort, and then the result's up to the Lord. You make your effort, because if you're living, then you can develop and practice Krishna consciousness. If you're dead, really hard to practice Krishna consciousness. "Virtue itself protects and sustains life. Therefore, grant me my desire, for it is not sinful," right? It's according to the regulations, especially with Kshatriyas. Yudhishthir smiled. He was impressed by Hidimbi's knowledge of religion. She would be a good wife for Bhima, whom he had noticed was catching her sidelong glances. Like, so it wasn't that he was not noticing her. Yudhishthir said, "You have spoken well, O highly attractive lady. It must be as you say. You shall become Bhima's wife. Remaining with him by day, you may sport with him as you please. At night, however, he should always be returned to our presence." Like that. You know, because he himself, you know, they'll sleep at night and that. That's her time of being awake. Hidimbi's face blossomed with happiness. She looked at Bhima with eyes full of love. The prince smiled at her and said, "I agree to this union, but I shall make one condition. As soon as you obtain a son, I shall depart and leave you alone. My brothers and I have much to achieve in order to win back our father's kingdom." Right, so he has, yeah, they have much to do there, so he won't stay and just settle down with her there. So then she will, you know, have her lifestyle and all that she'll have, and he'll carry on with his. But at the same time, as she's a, you know, proper wife of Bhima, then their son will be his son, and it'll be known in that way. So the social establishment is there. Hidimbi agreed. Then, assuming a large form, she carried them all to a high mountain called Salivahana. In that beautiful woodland region, the brothers constructed a wooden hut on the lakeshore. There they lived peacefully. Hidimbi took Bhima with her during the daytime. She soared through the sky to celestial places and showed Bhima numerous exquisite gardens frequented by citizens and Gandharvas, right? Because from there they went up into the Himalayas, and then from there, then she shows places where the Gandharvas and Vididharas and the demigods come down, special gardens that they go and hang out with. You know, so then he saw all these wonderful celestial sights. There they stayed together on the banks, sandy banks of crystal streams covered with blue and red lotuses. Hidimbi also took him to the land of the Guhyakas, situated on the shore of the divine Manasa Lake. Bhima saw beautiful towns full of shining mansions and palaces and groves of blossoming trees and heavenly flowers, whose fragrance completely enchanted the mind. Hidimbi was as dazzling as a goddess. She adorned herself with fine gems and gold ornaments, and she constantly poured forth sweet song. She captivated Bhima, and the 7 months they enjoyed together seemed to pass as quickly as if they were 7 days. That's why the Pandavas built a house, right? At the end of the 7 months, she gave birth to a son named Ghatotkacha. Within days of his birth, the boy grew to youthhood and took on the terrible form of a Rakshasa, right? Because humans, then you have this long time of gestation where the child's in the womb and then being born, and then it takes so many years to grow up and everything like this. But when you're dealing with all these celestial personalities, then from the time they conceive a child to the giving birth to the child growing up is like a very short time. You see here it's like, you know, hours or days or like this. And so he's born small, and then he grows up, and then he takes on the form of a Rakshasa, all like that. Because then the heavenly planets, they don't spend so much time on taking care of the children and that. That's what's so special about Krishna's pastimes in Braj, is that his whole childhood pastimes, where he's a baby and then growing up and all the things that he does, that's very unique, because you see all the other incarnations, they don't do that like that. Ram will have some like that, but that means the Swayam aspects, but all the Vishnumurtis, they just appear, perform a pastime, and then become unmanifest. His huge body was fearsome with knotted muscles, right? It means muscles means they're, you know, they're big and very, you know, strong, so very defined muscles, not just smooth, but, you know, really. A head as bald as a pot. Terrible red eyes, a long pointed nose, and ears like sharp arrows. His chest was broad, and he stood as tall as a palm tree, right? So he, you know, has the regular Rakshasa look, but he had his head was completely bald. Although a Rakshasa by nature, Ghatotkacha was inclined towards virtue, right, because of his father, and he became a great favorite of the Pandavas. He was devoted to their service, and they looked on him as a younger brother. Taught by the Pandavas, the boy quickly became proficient at weaponry and fighting. Right, so they stayed for some time there and then trained him and everything. But, you know, also because he's a celestial, he'll learn very quickly and everything. So it's not that, you know, it takes so long. After a couple of months, he asked permission from his parents to leave for the northern regions where yakshas and rakshasas dwell. So we see as he grew up, you know, within a very, you know, a few days or a few hours. It doesn't say here exactly. Within days of his birth, he was full size, full grown. And then within months, he had perfected the arts of weaponry and fighting and all that kind of thing. So then he's fully trained now as an adult. So now being trained and all that, then he asks his parents that he wants to go, you know, north to where the Rakshasas live. He promised the Pandavas that they need only think of him and he would return to render them any service required. After touching the feet of his mother and all of the Pandavas, he rose up to the sky and departed. The time had come for Bhima to leave Hidimbi. She embraced the Pandava tearfully and asked if she would ever see him again. Bhima assured her that in the future, after he and his brothers had overcome their obstacles, and were free from danger, they could be reunited. So we see also Arjuna, when at one point we see when he's traveling around India, then also there was then some wives in that. And so after they were established in the in on the throne and all that in their place, then the all these wives came in with their children and stayed with them there, like that. But otherwise, if they're like this roaming around, then the more people, the more trouble. And as Rakshasas, they know how to take care of themselves. Leaving Hedimbi in their mountain dwelling, the Pandavas and Kunti resumed their travels. They disguised themselves as ascetics by matting their hair and wearing tree bark garments, right? Because otherwise, people would recognize them as the Kshatriyas. So now they dressed as the Brahmins, you know, who are sages that live in the forest. Bhima carried his mother as they traveled through many different lands. Going from forest to forest, they passed through the countries of the Matsyas, Trigartas, and the Panchalas. No one recognized them. They proceeded slowly, unsure of what to expect, and awaiting the Lord's indication as to what they should do next. Right? So they're aware, they're doing whatever is their duty according to the situation, and they're always looking to see, okay, what's Krishna's plan? Because they want to follow that. Means, you know, it's like, this situation is there, this is what you should do. So they do all that. So it's not that they're not doing anything, but they're still trying to see what's the overall plan that Krishna has. So they'll make their plans, but it's not that their plans are fixed in stone. Their plans are to be unveiled as it matches Krishna's plan. So if Krishna's plan goes a different way, then their plan adjusts with that. Does that make sense? So you make your focus, your endeavor and all that, but you're dependent upon the Lord. So it's you have the atheist, then they just do their own plan and don't care about the Lord. And then, or there's those, the sentimentalist kind of, where, oh, it's all about the Lord and they do nothing. No, here, you're fully making your plans and doing, but you're always seeing what's the Lord's plan. While traveling, they studied the Vedic scriptures together. And all five brothers imbibed the science of morality and many other subjects described in the Vedas. Right? So while they're on these kind of situations like this, then they nicely just, they did more study and improved their character and everything. They didn't just, you know, weren't just lazy like that. So we'll stop here and then we'll see where they go next. So next now they'll meet Vyasadeva, and then Vyasadeva will give them some instruction. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.